Last week in episode 94, our conversation with Kirk and Christy East detailed how the events surrounding the loss of their son, Frank, reshaped their understanding of God and His presence in their lives. Though Frank was terribly ill, they exhibited extraordinary faith in Frank's healing and even in his resurrection after he had passed because they believed that God intended it. What they got was the gift of a deep assurance of Frank's presence in heaven through multiple unrelated sources. If you haven't listened to last week's episode yet, I encourage you to do so. A lot of details discussed this week reference that part of the conversation. But today, Kirk and Christy East talk about the ways God has brought them into a new life and is now working through them to bring the gifts of His kingdom to earth through powerful prayer in faith. The prayers of people of faith change things and bring God's kingdom and His intentions to earth. Kirk and Christy East are about to share how it's happened with them. So let's rejoin our conversation with Kirk and Christy East.
I said, it's like he pulled back the curtain and said, I want you to see what was happening. And I felt like it was in response to our trusting Him. And He's like, because you kept saying yes to me, because you kept saying, I will trust you and I will expect you to do above and beyond all I can ask or imagine. He's like, I'm going to show you what took place. And I'm going to have this girl have this vision and she's going to share it with you. And you get to see, like, this is what was happening. So again, I'm like, oh my goodness, you're so much bigger than I ever imagined, you know?
that's a big statement right there. And even that doesn't really put it into perspective, but that's so good. It's so rich. It's how you feel when you fractions of His work is revealed to you. It's yeah. Like, oh my gosh, you're way bigger than, way more genius than I can. I can't digest it mentally. So how has it changed you since then? I mean, you have to deal with the grief. You go through the process. Now it's been, what, 3 years, almost 2.5, 3 years since then?
I didn't like the word grief. I heard that a lot right after he died. And I thought, that word seemed too heavy and it seemed dark. And so I'm okay with the word sadness. But I think of grief, and there are plenty of Christians that are going to disagree with me and be like, no, it's okay for it to be in, but I don't want to partner with grief. I don't want to, it would be easy to sit in that to me. And so I make a conscious thought process of not agreeing with grief. Well, sadness
you
I can experience.
Looked up the definition.
Oh, yeah. So one of our kids was writing a paper. And so we were on the thesaurus page, and you could click on a word and it would show you the definition.
Yep.
And so he was, for some reason, needing to find like a synonym. And so I said, click on the word grief was on the paper, I mean, on the screen. And I said, click on that because I wanted to see what the definition was. It has since changed on the website. It doesn't do this anymore. So I'm thinking, did it ever say this? Was this just God telling, doing this at that moment on the screen for me? But I think it did say the loss of hope or the absence of hope, something like that. And I thought, well, I do not agree with that because we are full of hope. That's all we have is hope is and faith and trust that God is who He says He is and He does what He says He does. So I did not want to agree with grief at all. And that word still, when I hear it, I think, no, don't. Sadness, yes. We, of course, mourning. I'm okay with the word mourning because that's deeper and it's a little, it's more powerful than a sadness. It's your kid is not here anymore kind of sadness. But I wouldn't want to sit there either. But mourning is something I think is part of the human experience. And sadness is part of the human experience. But
no,
I don't
good.
Know that we're supposed to live in or agree with and be in grief. I understand this. Not everybody's going to agree with that. And some people go there in their mind
so
with it.
I would ask the question then. I mean, do you a state of perpetual grief, what is that road leading you to? Heaven?
You mean, oh, right, yes. Right? I see what you're saying. Yes, exactly. It does not lead to worship the Lord.
Right. I mean, so I understand what you're saying. And a period of mourning, of lamenting the separation of me and my child, but
But all we were full of hope.
The removal of hope is, yeah, that is not of God. You're mm-hmm. right. Yeah. I agree with that. I think that's really powerful to come from you.
I don't go into grief. I don't want to agree with that word.
Yeah.
Or I possess it. I don't want it to be a possession of mine. Mm-hmm. That's a better way of saying that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did that when Frank had cancer. We would not say his cancer because that gave him ownership of it or possession of it. So we watched
words matter.
The way.
Words
yes, matter. We said the cancer that's in his body. We would not say his cancer because it didn't words belong matter. To him.
Words,
it wasn't supposed
words
to be
are
there.
Blessings and curses, and that those things are real. You didn't think that demons were real until you saw one come out.
Right.
Curses are actually real too, and right. so are blessings. And those are. It's not just a training of a thought pattern, but it's an mm-hmm. actual thing that can rest on you and inhabit you, and you can cast those curses away, and you can speak blessings and live in those. And you know, was it Deuteronomy 30:18, 18:30, something like that? I can't remember. But Moses says, God says, "Hey, you know, I've presented before you both blessings and curse, life and death. Choose life. Mm-hmm. It'll go well with you." And it's like, okay, that's pretty simple. I hear you, and I agree with what you're saying there. How has it changed your future, your what might be your ministry?
Okay, so within just a few days after Frank goes to heaven, I felt God's overwhelming message to me was, Kirk, expect me to do the miraculous. Expect me to do the impossible. Expect me to do above and beyond all you can ask.
All right, hold on. You believe you and your sister got a word about the miraculous taking place while Frank was on this earth. You didn't get this word until after mm-hmm. he had passed. How long?
Yeah, just a few days.
But okay. So are you thinking that resurrection could still happen here, or are you thinking, I don't know what this means, and how are you getting this word?
You know, that I didn't hear this. I did. It's like every cell in my body just knew that's what he was telling me. It was so overwhelming. It was like, you know, it's like he's shouting at me, but yet, you know, I didn't hear anything, but it was that just overwhelming.
It's that impression. So this is God speaking.
And I never had, well, I won't say never, but I don't know if I'd ever had that kind of experience of just feeling so sure of this is what you're telling me.
Like driving down the road, in the shower,
like, I don't
mowing the grass.
A specific point that had happened.
I want to know how you come away with this impression that God is saying that they expect these miraculous things to start happening.
Well, and it wasn't miraculous.
Was it a dream?
Things. I mean, you know, it was just expect me to do the miraculous. And I'm like, I don't have a clue what that means. And of course, the average person that hears our story, especially if they don't believe in God at all, would say, well, that's crazy. You were expecting the miraculous for a year and a half, and it didn't happen the way you thought it would happen, for sure. And now, just a few days later, God tells you to expect the miraculous. And I'm like, yeah, that would seem totally just crazy. And I'm like, I don't have a clue what that means. But I'm like, okay.
That's, yeah, you know, I want to know, and I'm sure other people want to know, What did that sound like? What was it? Just an impression on your spirit? Is it an active imagination? What's different from God telling you, or your interpretation that this is God telling you this, than the idea that you had to start a water or air purifier? You know what I'm saying? How is it not just a thought that you generated yourself?
Well,
what's
different
about it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the obvious part with that would be that was nothing I would ever come up with on my own, especially since I'd just not seen the miraculous happen. And I said going into this, I'd never seen anybody healed or didn't know of, you know, I didn't have conversations, didn't know of anything like that happening, didn't know of that happening of people being raised from the dead. You know, I assumed it did, but I didn't have any conversation, didn't know anything personally. So, and that was the only things I could think of that were miraculous. So yeah, I mean that, you know, to the average person that would be like, okay, that doesn't make any sense at all. And I didn't know what it meant, but I'm like, okay. I mean, you know, he'd already just so changed my way of seeing and thinking. And, you know, again, I'm like, you are so much bigger than I ever even just could have imagined. So I just go through the next year just, I mean, you know, with a completely different mindset, but nothing significant. But then at some point, he just overwhelmed me again with the desire to pray for people and to pray specifically for healing. And again, as I have shared, I spent 10 to 15 years, I'd quit praying during those years, you know, feeling abandoned, felt like my prayers didn't get past the ceiling. And it was almost like I was tied up and I'm just like, got to get out of these ropes, and I have got to start sprinting toward this. It was that overwhelming. Like,
really?
I've got to pray for people. And I'm like, God, I'm terrified to pray for people. I mean, the whole time Frank was going through this stuff, she was the one praying for him because I had no confidence in me praying for him.
So you're saying praying for him, are you really meaning praying with them?
Well, yeah, now I pray by myself.
Right, okay. So praying with somebody is different than praying for somebody, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Over somebody.
It was more like when we would all get together and pray.
Right.
Then,
or she's talking about like when he was either in pain mm-hmm. or feeling sick and she would pray and command it to leave. There was one time she wasn't there and he asked me to pray. And I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah, people lock up when you have to pray aloud and with others or whatever. So what you're talking about is suddenly God's giving you this insatiable desire to pray aloud mm-hmm. over/with people, which is something that you have never been comfortable doing before.
And that had never done before.
Yeah.
And so when I prayed for him that one time, it was a very weak, timid prayer mm-hmm. of, God, please just do this.
Yeah.
And Frank was like, no, that's not how you pray. Because he'd been hearing her pray. You know, it was the pray with authority, commanded to leave. And I'm like, oh, crap, I don't know how to do that. You know, and I didn't have any confidence of doing that.
That's good.
And so I'm like, okay, you got to get me started. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, and I think at this point, maybe I had been listening to some people on YouTube that would pray for people, like be at Walmart, be at the park, whatever. And they just walk up somebody and maybe they're in their own crutches or they have some kind of physical sign that says they need prayer and, you know, and they pray for them. And I'm like, oh my goodness, that terrifies me. I can't imagine walking up to a complete stranger and just going, hey, I'm going to pray for you. And I'm like, that's just terrifying. And I said, you got to get me started. So I go to pick up one of my kids at the bowling alley one day. And I try to call him and his cell phone's not getting a signal. So he, you know, doesn't know I'm there. But I'm like, he knows what time I'm supposed to be here. So I thought, I'm just going to sit out here at the car. I'm going to listen to a sermon on my phone and I'll just wait on him. And it was a pretty day. And there was hardly any cars in the parking lot. And so I get out of the car and I'm like, I'm just walking around the parking lot. And there was a girl that I assumed like worked at the bowling alley on her break and she was sitting out on the curb. And I noticed her when I pulled up, didn't think anything about it. So after about, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes, as I'm standing out there beside the car with my phone going, she walks over, starts walking toward the car and I'm thinking, okay, looks like she's coming over here to me. And she said, are you a pastor? And I'm like, no. Why? You know, I'm thinking, what in the world? Why would she ask me that? And she said, well, I heard you listening to something on your phone. And what are you listening to? And so I told her what I was listening to. And she said, would you pray for me? And I almost passed out. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I would love to pray for you. And so at the same time, I'm thinking, I'm scared to death to pray for you, but I'd love to pray for you. And So she kind of vaguely told me what was going on with her, and it had nothing to do with health issues, but kind of just a very general something that was going on. And so I prayed, and you know, afterwards completely felt like I probably blew that. You know, it's like, I don't even know what I said. But I'm like, wow, God, you're just completely, constantly, you know, amazing me.
Like, yeah, because you had just prayed, hey, can you get me started? And next thing you know, somebody walks and said, can you pray with me?
It's like, yeah. Okay. I mean, that's awesome. Obviously, I'd never had that happen in my entire life. Nothing anywhere close to that.
That's great.
So I'm like, all right, I guess we're going to get started. So, I mean, I guess, you know, it's like he gave me more boldness. Now, I've always been outgoing. I never meet a stranger. We would go camping, and we'd pull up and park, and there'd be somebody at their campsite next to us. And within 5 minutes, I'm like, well, hey, that looks like you've got an air fryer. How long you had that? You know, mm-hmm. And I'm having a conversation. So I'm like, it's easy to talk about everything under the sun, but, you know, spiritual matters. And,
sure.
And for sure, how can I pray for you?
Mm-hmm.
But I would be at a Walmart or a Home Depot, and God would, it was like he did back in the air purifier days, where he would provide something that I couldn't take credit for. It didn't make any sense. Somebody would end up approaching me, and they might say, hey, I like that shirt you have on. And that would start the conversation. And so then after we talked for a little bit, I'd say, well, hey, is there anything I can pray for you? And it just ended up being these, you know, broad spectrum of things that would come up. One day I'm in Home Depot, and I took one of my kids with me, and I'm like, all right, let's see if God has somebody in here for us to pray for. And so we go get the thing that I'm needing to get, and we're about to go check out. And I was like, oh, wait a minute, let's make a trip around the store. We'll see if there's somebody that we can pray for. And I thought, oh, I need this item, and it's on this aisle. So we go to that aisle. There was a lady there that were, she had this box in her hand, and it was one of these mops that, I don't know what they're called.
The spinning mop.
This is a spinning mop thing.
Mm-hmm.
And before I knew it, the words were coming out of my mouth of, hey, my wife has one of those. And that started the conversation. And she's asking me questions, and we're talking. And so, you know, that went on for a good 5 minutes. And I said, well, hey, I love to pray for people. Is there anything I can pray for you? She started crying. And then she begins to tell me all the stuff that's going on in her life. And we probably stood there for at least 30 minutes, and I got to pray for her, and it just made me so aware that there are people walking around every day that are hurting, and they're in these dark places, and God wants to set them free. And that was his commission for all of us, you know, release the prisoners from the dark dungeons that they sit in. And I thought back to the day that Frank passed, just a couple of hours later, we had no food, and I had to go to Panera to get food. And I remember thinking, none of these people know what just happened 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
They have no idea. And so that began to kind of be the, you know, the thought when I was out of, oh, there's people all around me that you look at them and you have no idea what's going on with them. But so many are, you know, just in need of prayer and healing and deliverance. And so it just kept getting easier and easier. And
were you continuing to be prompted to do this? I mean, is this a developing change?
Yeah, well, it began to be like I every day would leave the house with the expectation of, okay, there's got to be somebody you want to put in front of me, somebody I can pray for. And I would get upset if there weren't. You know, I'd come home like, there wasn't anybody, you know, or nobody, you know, nobody that became really apparent.
Yeah, here's something. God's giving me this right now. just before this all started, you were relieved of the presence of a spirit of abandonment. What you're doing in this prayer ministry is the opposite of abandonment. Mm. In fact, you are running to people to join them, and they are not, they're leaving you not feeling abandoned. When you got relieved of this spirit of abandonment, it opened the door for you to do some really powerful kingdom work that was holding you prisoner from what you were called to do with the personality that you have and all the other social skills that you have and speaking skills and your interpersonal skills that were imprisoned with this spirit of abandonment. And I think that God shaped you into this person who is going to be doing some pretty remarkable works for the kingdom, including praying healing, including your own deliverance of others, because you've experienced it. And when you were relieved of the spirit of abandonment, sometimes I think people have talked about this before, that demons are, they become the antonym of the angel that they once were when they were in heaven. And so I think of you being oppressed with this spirit of abandonment, that when it's released and you're filled with the Holy Spirit, that the opposite of that begins to manifest itself in your life. Mm. And so I can see that. I can see you speaking of it. I would be surprised if you do not have additional stories of prayer where what you prayed, you've been given the gift of seeing fruit from the prayer. Have you seen that? Have you seen some a life change in people since then?
It's amazing. And so everybody I've prayed for has been a complete stranger. So I pray and usually walk away, and it's like, I don't have a way to see them again or come in contact with them again. But we were at the beach in June of last year, and we met a girl at a jewelry booth that she worked there, and Christy was getting something, and she was talking to her, and the jewelry, she had to hammer, and she would stop and have to shake her arm. And Christy was asked, like, you know, what's going on? Why is that happening? And she told us what the thing was that her.
It was a genetic something that was wrong with her.
It was like she could be a circus contortionist. So she could, you know, take parts of her body and twist it and bend it. And it's like she was made out of rubber, but it caused her pain all the time, every day. And she was born with it. So she'd lived this way her whole life. And so Christy comes and gets me and tells me, I'm like, oh my goodness, we're definitely going to pray for her. And so we did. But we all, pretty much the whole family was there. So we all got to get around her and put our hands on her. So I just prayed for healing for her. And we leave. And so we're back at the beach 2 months later. And I said, well, I want to get something from that jewelry place. But weirdly enough, when I said that, it didn't occur to me that she worked there. And so we go through the whole week, and we get down to the last day that we're there, and we went out to eat, and the place closed at 9. So it got to be like close to, it was after 8. We're like, okay, we got to get to this place before they close. And so we, you know, have to drive a good 15 minutes to get there. And as I'm walking toward the booth, it all of a sudden hit me. I'm like, oh my goodness, I forgot. I prayed for this girl at this booth. I hope she's going to be there. And she was there, and she looks up when we are walking up to her, and she gets this big smile on her face. And she's like, I remember y'all. And I said, well, how are you doing? And she said, I am so much better since you prayed for me. You know, like 90% of my pain is gone. And then the more amazing part was, she wasn't even supposed to be there. And she lives an hour away, and her boyfriend was working. So she drove an hour, got there at 8 o'clock.
Like, we were only, she'd only been there 30 minutes when we walked up.
Yeah, so she wasn't even supposed to be there that day, and got there just right before we did. And I'm like, God brought you here tonight just for me so that I could find out that he has been doing the miraculous after I pray. And I, you know, I'm like, I didn't even know what was going on. So I'm like, you know, so I'm crying. I'm like, just like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. And so I'm like, well, we're going to pray again. If you're not 100% better, then we're praying again. And so we prayed for her again. And then we ended up leaving. But I have a piece of jewelry from her that that I have in a necklace. And then in
October, that says.
Oh, well, yeah. The whole point was I wanted to get one that said, expect the impossible. Mm. So I have a necklace that says, expect the impossible. And then we were in Gatlinburg in October, and they had this big crafts fair, and there was a couple hundred booths. And so I'm walking around, walk up to a booth that an older lady is there, and she was wearing oxygen. And I said, well, what's going on? And she said, well, my lungs have been messed up from COVID for 2.5 years. And so she'd been on oxygen for 2.5 years, never able to get off. And her oxygen levels, wearing the oxygen, were only at like 91. And so I ended up saying, well, I want to pray for you. And so I prayed for her. And she gave me her phone number. And I was like, okay, this is exciting. I get to find out what's going on. And I meant to call her the next day. We got busy. And I said, so the 2 days later, I said, well, let's just go back over to the crafts thing and hopefully I can find her. And so it took a little while. We finally found her. She actually found Christy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if she met Christy that day.
We had not met. No, mm-hmm. I wasn't there for any of the praying with.
Which was weird. Yeah. So somehow they end up talking. And she didn't even know who Christy was. And they're standing there waiting on me. And I get there and she's all excited. And she's like, I got to tell you what happened. She said, 30 minutes after you prayed for me, I started coughing up stuff. And she said, that lasted all the rest of the day, all through the night. She said, constantly at night, I was having to get up and go to the bathroom and cough up stuff and whatever. And happened, you know, all day the next day. And she said, so I went without oxygen for 4 hours the day before. So the day after I prayed for her. And so I'm like, oh my goodness. So, you know, again, I'm all emotional. I'm like, this is amazing. And I'm so excited. And she took me around to about 5 booths to introduce me to people. This is the fellow that prayed for me. And
because she'd already been telling everybody, you know, I went off my oxygen for 4 hours because this man came and prayed for me. And so
she was just, you know, obviously so excited. And so then she just kept us updated after we left. And so then she went without oxygen for like 6 hours and then 8 hours. And then within like 2 weeks, she was completely off of oxygen. And she goes back to her doctor and they verify that her lungs are great. So she sent me a picture of her and, you know, not wearing any oxygen. And so she's been great. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, I'm getting to the thing you told me, expect the miraculous, expect the impossible, expect me to do above and beyond all you can ask, think, or imagine. I'm like, you're doing it. And I am just blown away. So I go from having no confidence in prayer, quit praying, feel like my prayers don't get past the ceiling. And like, isn't that crazy that you launch me into this of being able to pray for people and seeing God heal and do
the
miraculous.
It's the grace of God. It's the power and grace of God to give us the gift of His presence and exercising His authority. And not only that, I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm sitting here thinking of 2016, Kirk. You ain't even the same guy. I mean, I didn't know you back then, but I do. I know that guy, and you're not the same guy. You talk about a new creation. A transformation. People talk about evidence for the existence of God. When I think about it in my own life, I've had some powerful prayer get answered. That's just not. I can get into it, not here, but in conversation. That's just not coincidence. It's pretty powerful. There's, you know, I always go back to the fact that there's nothing, or there's something rather than nothing, and how you get all to those places. But I have to point to my own personal absolute rebaking of my DNA from the core into the outer parts, and that I'm a different person. And that not a different person like I didn't work out and then I started working out and I got fit. I mean, that's discipline. This wasn't an area that I could just exercise discipline. I wanted to be a better person all of my life and a different person and not having some of these issues. And it took discovering the existence of the author of life and his power and asking him and him moving in and cleaning out the bad stuff. Not me, him. And it's my own transformation. I see that in you. I flat out see that in you. I can't envision the person that you guys describe. I don't in this.
I know.
And
I can't think. Matter of fact, she would say something that in my dark period, the thing that she would have said would have set me off. Mm-hmm. And so then after I was delivered, she would say something that she would think,
Brace. Yeah, I would brace and think, oh, shoot, I shouldn't have worded it that way. He's going to think I meant this. And I was, whatever. I would just imagine how he was going to take it wrong. Probably there was probably some offense there at the time.
Sure.
But then he didn't do it. And that was one of the ways I saw he was different. I thought he didn't have the reaction I was expecting out of the thing that was innocent, that thing.
But then she would say, I thought you were going to react this way and you didn't. And I'm like, I can't even imagine why I would have ever reacted differently.
In all of this, I don't get dreams a lot. I dream a lot, but they're all crazy dreams with, guy in a spacesuit eating Chick-fil-A and, riding a hot dog. I don't know what any of that means if there's somebody. But occasionally I will get a dream that is, I believe, heaven sent, that is teaching me a thing. And a dream I got early on, I actually moused back through my Google Drive into documents that I'd written before looking for them. And it turns out there's three of them, I think, that I had specifically over the last, 5, 6, 7 years. But in one of them, and when you're talking, like you're praying, this prayer thing, I hear it and see it. But Jesus was in a classroom, big classroom, university style, and we were all in there, and he was at the head, and he was a teacher, but there was like hundreds of people in there, and I was near the back, and there's conversation, and it's like before class or something like that, but it's him up there, and I kind of lose him in the crowd, and people are mingling around and all that stuff, and I should read it instead of trying to remember it now. But then all of a sudden, I don't see him anymore. He's gone. We're all kind of looking around and nobody notices that he's gone. And everybody's still just talking or whatever. And I remember the specifics of the room and the desk and the tones and all that kind of stuff. And then everybody realizes that he's gone and it kind of falls silent. And then all of a sudden, he's back and he's teaching, and his words in the dream were, and I may botch it, but I'll do my best. Only those with their eyes on God can see him. And I'm like, really? Can't God appear in his own ways or whatever? But as you are walking around, you are in this place where you are looking for the opportunities that God has for you. You are looking for his presence in the world. People say, yeah, he didn't talk to people. He didn't talk to me. I don't hear God talking to me. What are you talking about? But as my faith has matured and as I have gotten closer to God and spent a lot of time with him, I just had the volume of life up too loud. He was talking the whole time. I just didn't have my ears on him. He was standing in front of me the whole time. I just didn't have my eyes on him. I have my eyes on him now, and I hear him now. I listen for him now, and he talks to me all the time, even in just mundane little things. And I hear that in what you describe. And once you kind of get into a place of experiencing him quite a bit, you just don't you're just uncomfortable doing life without him. Mm. Mm-hmm. And if you're a non-believer listening to this, it's like, that sounds like hogwash to me. And it's like, okay, I understand that. But I was that way. I didn't have my eyes on God. And he put in me a desire to seek him. So I picked up scripture. So I prayed a little bit. I did little things. And the more I was around him, the more I saw him. And I think if I were to ask you what causes you to believe that God is real, how would you answer that? What causes you to believe that God? Is it this? Is it your transformation? Is it his daily presence in your lives? Is it what happened? Is it the visions that happened at the end of Frank's life?
For me, it is all of the experiences. It's the relationship I have that came through difficult circumstances and him being with me through them. The closeness I got with the Lord through tragedies, through difficulties, not tragedies, but through difficulties. And then the evidence things, like, yes, the text, the people saying, I got this message from the Lord and it lines up with what's going on. Or it's seeing his transformation is huge.
Yeah.
When I said I'd made a list that I prayed for him in those dark days, one of the list items is that he would pray powerful prayers. That's something.
And she, I remember her telling me that That's back awesome.
Then. Oh, I didn't tell him any about the list until he changed. But once he changed, I was like, I'm just going to read some things off to you and I can check these all off now. But when I wrote them, I couldn't check any of them off.
But she told me that before God had overwhelmed me with wanting to pray for people. And so she prayed powerful prayer. I'm like, I don't see that one. That's just, I can't imagine that. I don't even know what that means. And I think it's interesting that, you know, the way you said that of what makes you believe, because I remember going through the wilderness periods and having to see God, you know, just create something out of nothing to provide money. And I know the thought would go through my mind of, okay, is this real? Is it? Because every fiber of your being that's looking at everything in the natural makes you go, I'm believing in something I can't see, I can't feel, can't touch. And I'm trusting that there's going to be money so I can pay my rent, buy food. And I know that somewhere in the back of my head that was like, is this real? It better be real. Even though I kept seeing it over and over again after months and months and months, I know that still was ringing in my ear of, am I an idiot? Am I, just basically, everything I'm banking on is God's there and he's going to continue to do this and take care of me and provide for me. So last night I was like, it's crazy that I went from feeling so unloved by God. And I said, now I feel like I am, scripture talks about I'm the apple of his eye. He thinks about me all the time. His thoughts about me outnumber the grains of sand on all the seashores. I feel like I am, of all the things he created, he's the most proud of me. Now, obviously, every person can say that, which is amazing because it doesn't diminish his love for you. In the earthly realm, it's hard to say that about one kid that you have. You can't say of all the kids I have, I'm the most, proud of you, or I'm the most excited about you, or I love you the most, because then that takes away from everybody else.
God is unlimited in his capacity.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. Yeah.
So every person can say of all of his creation, he's the most proud of me, loves me the most. So I went from feeling so unloved to feeling like the most loved. I went from feeling like my prayers didn't make it past the ceiling to feeling like my prayers will change the course of the nation. There's no limit.
Mm-hmm.
Not just my family, not just my city, but my prayers are powerful. And that was, you know, obviously that was missing. That was missing from even before I went through my dark period. I remember just, and I'm again, I guess it was the enemy probably trying to get me to question things. And I remember thinking, I just don't feel like my prayers matter. And I don't remember there being any reason I would think that, but I remember thinking that. This was, you know, within 2, 3, 4 years after I became a believer. And I said, and then I go from being terrified to pray for my son because I'm like, I don't know. I don't feel confident. I don't feel like I have any authority. I don't feel like I can say the right things or whatever. Just every fear imaginable to God equips me to be bold enough to go out and pray for complete strangers. And then again, along with taking me out of that 10 to 15 years of darkness, and with one night and one prayer, I'm completely set free, and everything was different after that. There was no struggle. There was no, oh, I got to grit my teeth and just change and make things happen. I got to be a better person. And it was just like, huh, it's like waking up. Like, who have I been all these years?
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, it's like I've been, you know, was taken over and held captive, and which I was.
Turns out that's exactly what it was.
Right.
Yeah.
I tell you, the goings on with the way you were tested in your faith, and with Frank's situation, his things he saw, his experience, you've gotten the gift of confirming that, I mean, not that you didn't know this before, but that he's in heaven and and from multiple places. Just, wow, that's amazing. And even those just outside confirmations just are so neat and so powerful. And when I heard your story the first time, that's really what drew me. But I would say also as important, if not just as important, is prayer for your spouse and prayer for your children and prayer for, and it's not just in your closet. Yes, in your closet. Your prayers go up like incense before God, and it's a pleasing aroma. And He does new things as a result of prayer and the prayer of His saints, of His children. They reach Him and He hears us. And when we pray for our spouse, and man, people don't pray for their spouses. People don't pray with their spouses. People don't lay hands on their spouse. Now, they may pray for them in a vindictive way. It's like, I'm going to pray for you, you know, but not out of a sense of compassion. You took up what would have been by 98% of the world a personal attack and battle off of the personal side and turned it into the spiritual side. And the result of that prayer and God's working in his life is a transformation into a guy who is not only a beacon of light in your home, but is now in a ministry that will only expand from here. Mm-hmm. By the way, you're in the infancy of your ministry. Mm-hmm. You just need to know that. And so are you. And I know you've been spiritually mature for a while, but you have new horizons coming for you, that should be super energizing.
Mm-hmm.
But to stop and say, this is a spiritual endeavor. My spouse's behavior is a spiritual attack on them and our family. And so I'm going to go into prayer on this. And I may even take authority and pray over them. And this is what a shining example of that. And now, unbelievably, your ministry is one rooted in prayer. Of all things. Isn't God genius? It's unbelievable. But I can't, that's not the direction we were thinking that we were going today. And God pulled that out as a just huge piece of fruit that I think there are many, many people here that need to digest and say, wait a minute. So that's what's going on in my marriage. So what's going on with my teenager or my young adult or my child or my parent. That's what's going on. Maybe my approach to this has been all wrong, and maybe I need to approach this as a spiritual battle. Maybe I need to pray with compassion for them because they're locked in a prison rather than they're trying to defeat me. Mm-hmm. That's such a big deal. That's so good. If you had to kind of look at things overall from then to now, both the spiritual side of this battle and all that happened with Frank, have you gotten far enough down the road that you see a general overall message that you would deliver from this?
Well,
I would say trust God, like all you'll, and live in obedience. I think being obedient to what God's asking you to do, even if when it seems stupid to you or earthly, or if you think that doesn't make sense, that's just kind of weird. Do it anyway. Yeah. Be obedient anyway. Mm-hmm. He'll never say, well, too bad. I now can't fix everything because you did this stupid thing that I didn't ask you. And listen to his, he wants to communicate with you. Like you said, you didn't think God wanted to talk to you. He does. And he will. And listen for it.
And it might not be comfortable. I'm sitting here listening to you. It's like, last thing I want to do is pray. I'm trying to think about God saying, yeah, it's definitely not in my will that you pray for somebody else. Right. Like, of course, that's what I want you to do.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a little uncomfortable to start with, but you're going to see some amazing things. And so I'm not saying that it's going to be super comfortable, but listen to my voice. That's right. Be obedient to when you know that God is nudging you to do something, and the comfortable, safe place is here, and the challenging place is here, but he's asking you to do this. Step out in that faith and be obedient.
And your enemy is never another person. Your enemy is always the enemy. It's always a spiritual darkness. It's never the person. So yeah,
so
know who your enemy is.
Trust God.
So he prayed recently for a fella, like just the boldness to go up to a fella who was in a wheelchair at the store, because you felt like God was saying, do it, right?
Oh, well, I mean, it was obvious. Like, okay, you definitely need healing.
Yeah.
And this was somebody, he was in his 60s, and at 16 years old, he had dove into the water. This is very similar to the Johnny Erickson story. And broke his neck,
mm-hmm.
and had been in a wheelchair ever since. And I think was paralyzed from here down. He could, previously in life, he had the use of both arms, but then he had lost the use of his left arm. So then he only had the use of his right arm. And there were times in the previous months where I would see somebody like that, and I remember one time specifically saying, okay, God, I want to pray for somebody that's more than just I got a pain in my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking specifically like, okay, you know, I kept hearing tons of testimonies from people on YouTube of people in wheelchairs and getting up and walking and being healed. And I thought, I want to pray for somebody like that. And we walk into a restaurant, and there was a fella in there that was kind of in that same situation, where you could tell it wasn't just a wheelchair. It was a motorized. I've been in this for years.
Yeah.
And I walk in like full of, yeah, show me somebody. And as soon as I saw him, I'm like, okay, that's overwhelming. I don't think I can do it. And, you know, I just let what I saw completely immobilize me. And I was like, oh, I can't do it. And I just didn't. So when I saw this fella at the grocery store, I'm like,
just in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I'm like, we're gonna slay this giant. I'm, heart of Caleb. We're not gonna run from this. And so it was a little uncomfortable, but I'm like, I walked around the store a few times, and I finally got up the nerve, and I'm like, okay, listen, I want to pray for you. And I was thinking, you know, of course, all the negative thoughts of, well, what if he's like, I've been in this for years, prayer ain't gonna work. Anything negative. And he was like completely receptive. And after us talking, we went over to the side of the store so we could talk. And he was at the exact same place I was at with trusting God for healing and expecting healing and like, God, I'm not in this wheelchair to be an example of how to suffer. I'm here for you to heal me and demonstrate to the world that you are a God that heals. This is, you know, every, I love in the scripture, it says every person that was brought to Jesus was healed. Acts 10:38. Nobody came to him and he turned them away. He never said, nah, this, no, not going to do it. Or you don't have enough faith or whatever. It was all, sometimes they came, didn't have very much faith.
That's right.
And he didn't.
And that fellow had prayed that morning or maybe the day before that, to say like, I'm tired of being in this chair. I need you to heal me.
Well, he was basically saying, I give up. Mm-hmm. He's like, I've been believing for years. And he's like, God, I'm not giving up on you, but I'm just tired and I'm just beat up. So I was like, well, it's not an accident that God puts you here today for you to come across my path. And so, you know, I prayed for him and I'm like, I don't have a clue what happened after he left that store. I don't know if he woke up the next morning, jumped out of bed or what, but every time I pray, I'm like, I'm expecting you to do the miraculous. I don't care if I don't get to see it. That's fine.
Yeah, that's faith, right? It's uncomfortable, but you're thinking, if I have compassion on this person, do I just walk on by?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's in the compassion, it's true compassion for them rather than, hey, watch how my prayer works, and I've been given this gift to just overcome with compassion for someone and saying God and standing in for them in your prayer. But that's a great exhibition of faith in prayer, and I love that he has put that spirit in you. And I think there's a lot for us all to learn in being bold in our prayer. And it's trusting God. It's stepping out in faith, and it's not about whether God chooses to heal them or not. It's about whether you choose to help them or not. Mm-hmm. I think. And I think when we view it that way, it's like, Kirk's not healing anybody.
Right.
Right. Jesus is healing people. And he's healing through the faith of people like Kirk and others. And I think he wants to do these things. He tells us these greater things will you do than mm-hmm. these that he did. And it's like, okay, that sounds good. Sign me up. And hey, it's happening. It's happening across the world.
Yeah.
It really is. And when we think that those things don't happen, we're just mistaken. And I have seen it happening. I have talked to people who have seen it happen. I have talked to people who have prayed healing and it's happened. It's just happening way more than the skeptics think. So if you're called to it, and we're all called to pray for people. So don't think you're not called to pray for people.
Right.
That's absurd. That's the enemy trying to lie to you again. We're all called to pray for people and for each other. And I would say start in your home. Start with your spouse.
Yeah.
And start with your kids and be obedient to God from there and go out and make disciples of others and be an agent for God's power to be demonstrated in this world. Because when people see it, we're just filling up heaven, man. He's filling up heaven through these things, and it's what we're here to do, and it's so, so cool. So I love that story. I love all of this. This is so good. And I did not think that we would get to the end of a conversation with a couple of parents who lost their 21-year-old son to cancer, talking about the goodness of God and how we love seeing what is going on. And that is just a testament to his goodness and his faithfulness and the way he turns things that the world says are horrible into things that are beautiful.
Exchanges beauty for ashes.
Yeah. Kirk and Christy East, man, you gave yourself to come and share and to deliver the good news of the kingdom of God mm-hmm. in the face of really difficult things, and sharing his really powerful presence in your lives and the way he has transformed things and even given you the gifts of seeing that your son is with him
mm-hmm.
and the peace of that as well. Y'all are so kind and you're so good and you got such a ministry ahead of you. And I am thankful that you shared it. And I expect it to grow from here. And I expect you in a couple of years to shoot a text over and say, Stace, you ain't heard nothing yet. You need to come back in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I hope this conversation has helped you understand prayer in new ways. First, I hope you understand that God wants you to pray not only for your circumstances, but as a compassionate intercessor for others. Christy and Kirk were at substantial odds in their marriage when God showed Christy that though they seemed that way, the problems weren't personal, they were spiritual. And when she became bold enough to pray with Kirk, a prayer of deliverance, both Kirk and their marriage were healed. That should energize anyone who has tension in their marriage with their kids or others that are close. Second, I hope you can see how God wants us to be willing to get uncomfortable to compassionately pray for and with other people. James 5:16 says, "The prayer of a righteous person has great power as it is working." You know when God is nudging you to go and pray for someone with that person. Be obedient to that nudge. I can assure you that you will not regret it. Kirk and Christy's story is ultimately about obedience and prayer. Let it build your faith. Thank you for joining us today on A Stronger Faith. I'd like to ask you to consider how God has made His presence known in your life. Spend some time reflecting and praying on that this week and see what He shows you. And if you feel like it's a story He wants you to share, consider going to astrongerfaith.org/contact and letting us know. It might be something He intends to use to bring others into a richer connection with Himself, and we'd be honored to help you share it. And if you know of someone else who may have a great story, recommend them the same way through the same link. If you feel like God may be prompting you to become a financial supporter of this ministry, please visit astrongerfaith.org/give. In either case, we'd love to have you join us in this work. Until next time, we will continue to pray for peace and a stronger faith for you and those you love.